Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Today, really over the course of the weekend, I started to lose a little bit of that confidence. Today, though, is the first time that in my gut, deep down in my gut, and it's not based off of just last night's result. You're allowed to lose a game here over the final, you know, whatever, the stretch of 12. Now, as we said, it's 10 games remaining, and they play this afternoon with Jonah Tong on the mound. More on that in just a second. But it's the first time my gut is telling me I don't believe that they're going to make the postseason. Now, you could say whether they get in or not, how they would do well, or whatever, or how they're set up to have success. I still, part of me believes that. But for too long, the feeling around the Mets has been hanging on for dear life for that final wild card spot. Not doing anything to pull away, to separate themselves. So much so that they let a more dangerous team hang around, which is also part of my feeling as I'm referring to the Diamondbacks here, than the Reds or the Giants. So there are a lot of factors to why after last night's game, and even really leading up to it, and knowing that the Mets are on thin ice to begin with and playing with fire here, that my gut feel is telling me they don't have enough to get across the finish line. I'm getting 2022 vibes. Obviously, back then, it was more about the division as opposed to just getting in the postseason. But the vibes then were, God, just win a game and hang on. Come on, all you got to do is win one here. Win this series. Win a game. Beat them once. And when you're trying so desperately just to hang on, generally, you fall flat. The Mets did in 2022, losing that division. And again, I'm feeling like they're just doing anything they can to try to piece it together to make sure they just get in. Then when they get in, okay, exhale, deep breath, reset a little bit, go with the piggyback stuff, whatever it is they want to do. Could be dangerous in the postseason. However, getting there for them with 10 games remaining is going to be the challenge. And based on the way that they have played since June 13th on, even more specifically, the last 2 weeks, like you could erase the entirety of August if you'd like. How about September? How about September? I mean, an 8-game losing streak, it wouldn't have been bad enough if you lost 6 of 8. You had to lose all 8. And then the feeling is that when, you know, when they're in the midst of that, oh, God, this team. And then they win 2, and everybody's like, okay, deep breath, we're good. No, no. You're lucky. The Mets are lucky that the Diamondbacks coughed up a golden opportunity yesterday. Now, remember, not only did the Diamondbacks have the pedigree, and they've been playing good baseball really since the All-Star break. I forget the exact record, but over 500, been a pretty solid team working their way back into it. And because the Mets can't win a freaking game, the win total to eventually clinch that final wildcard spot has come down, which has allowed the Diamondbacks to get back in. And they, of course, passed the Giants, passed the Reds, and now are a game and a half back of the Mets with the tiebreaker. And that goes based off of division record, which can change. Diamondbacks play the Dodgers still. The Mets play the Nationals and Marlins. So that can change. But the fact is, right now, the Diamondbacks have the tiebreaker, and they're on their heels just a game and a half back. So they have a more, in my mind, legitimate threat right behind them than the Giants and Reds. That's number one. And really, it's not, you know, in the pecking order, number one. I'm just giving you one reason. Maybe the most important factor is the Mets themselves. Who the hell is going to pitch these games down the stretch? Like, yeah, the piggyback idea is great, but you're instead now taking two capable starters and combining them for one game, and then for the other games, you don't have many other capable starters, starting with today in Jonah Tong. I love Jonah Tong. Easy kid to root for. How can you not? I mean, 22, he looks like he's 18. You know, just a young kid, excited to be here, wears his emotions on his sleeve, got emotional after the game on Friday where he couldn't get out of the first inning. That's like, yeah, of course the human side of you roots for him and all that stuff, and he'll be fine, hopefully have a great big league career. However, when you got 10 games to go, you can't be messing around with somebody who you have no idea if he's going to be able to get out of the first inning or not. He's got three big league starts to his name. One was good, and the reason why we thought it was very good is because it was much better than what the majority of the other starters were giving the Mets. So his five innings and whatever it was that first night in just a dreadful baseball game that feels like it took forever, it was better because he actually went five innings and gave the team a chance to win, which is something that the majority of the staff wasn't doing for a month and a half, maybe even longer than that. But his second start wasn't very good. Six innings, four runs, giving up home runs all over the place. It was okay. Again, much better than what they were getting, but not great. And then his third start wasn't even really a start. He got two outs. Getting beat up and just totally melted down. So how the hell do you expect him to go out there today and give them a quality start? He might. I have no idea. We don't know, but I don't feel comfortable with doing that. 10 games to go. Playoff life on the line. This is who you're having start the game. And the reason is because they don't have a better answer for it. And then you move forward after what Peterson showed you last night. I mean, David Peterson has been nothing short of a disaster since August. This guy was an all-star. And I like Peterson. I love his competitiveness. Was a bulldog out of the bullpen a year ago. I liked what he was made up of in 2020 when he first burst on the scene. I like Peterson. But maybe his innings, where he's thrown the most innings that he's thrown before, maybe that's catching up with him. Again, I don't have the answers, but I don't need to. I'm a sports talk show host. Barely. They do need to have the answers. They're the ones that are running the team. And how could you trust Peterson the next time out? And what did Mendoza say so confidently after the game last night? Oh, yeah, he's going to make his next start. He is? And then you look at it and do the math and say, well, geez, I mean, I don't know what. They don't have enough. That's the bottom line. There's only 10 games to go. And you can't even piece together a rotation that you feel comfortable with getting you over the hump to just get in the damn playoffs. So maybe you could then take some of those starters and combine them, piggyback them, plan PB, piggyback. Hey, it worked for a night. Yeah, okay, it did. But would they have been better off splitting those two up? I mean, that's how desperate it is that you're saying, hey, like, I would rather have had Manaea start today or start the other day and then have, you know, push everybody back as opposed to Tong taking the start. They chose Tong. We'll see what happens. But they also chose to use Holmes and Manaea on the same day. And now what's going to happen moving forward here? Sproat Friday, McClain Saturday. Okay, you trust those guys. Holmes, Manaea again on Sunday? Or are you going to save Manaea and push him back? You have the off day Monday, which could help you. I mean, you're going to have Peterson and Tong potentially pitch again. Maybe Senga can come up from the minors if he does well in his next minor league start and then take one of those spots. But we're talking about one game of the final, you know, 10 that you're going to have Senga pitching even with him. Like, do you trust Senga? You can't. Do you trust Peterson? You can't. Do you trust Tong? You can't. Outside of McClain and maybe now the Holmes-Manaea piggyback, like, you can't trust any other spot in that. Or even Sproat, he's been pretty good, but again, he's young. Like, you can't rely on him, and his velocity had a significant drop-off in his last start. I mean, you take 5-6 scoreless every single time, but is it enough? When you actually do the math, is it enough to get this team through the final 10 games to make sure they get over the hump and hang on to that spot and go into the postseason? And for the first time, I'm telling you, I don't believe that it is. In my gut, I don't feel like it's enough. They've done too much damage here. They're played with fire too long. Too long. This thing's going to come down to the wire. Even if they win today. Like, okay, it's a game and a half right now. So what, 2.5 with 9 games to go? Yeah, the math is in your favor. But still, I mean, the Mets are, they are one. They're now one bad series away from having the season be a failure. One bad series could have them be on the outside looking in, which is something we really haven't seen. Even Saturday, it was when they lost that brutal, brutal loss. And that, to me, was the first, like, real kick in the nuts. Gut punch, whatever. But, I mean, come on. We've evolved. It's 2025. That was the first real kick in the nuts. That Saturday night loss. I held out all I could. That one was like, I just can't do it anymore. But then they followed up with two straight wins, and I still didn't fully believe that they were, that they've turned the corner after those two straight wins. And even if you did believe that, it's still going to come down to the wire. We're here. This is it. Game and a half lead without the tiebreaker, 10 games to go. With a lot of starting pitchers that you do not trust to get you through these final 10 games. How can anybody, other than saying, well, they have the game and a half lead, cross your fingers that time will run out before they get caught. That, to me, is not the recipe for success. They're trying different things. You give them credit for that. They're doing anything they can to figure out a way to get through these. Generally, when you're in this predicament and you put yourself in this spot, you're playing with fire, you will be burned. And for the first time, I feel like the Mets are going to get caught by the Diamondbacks. And when all's said and done, be on the outside looking in. BT and Sal on the Fan. BT out sick again today. Our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. We'll get to some of the Yankee stuff. We'll get to plenty of the football ahead of week three. Week three starting tonight with the Bills and the Dolphins. But we start with the Mets. Tony is in Naugatuck, Connecticut. What's up, Tony?
Hey, Sal. How are you, Sal?
How are you, Tony?
I'm really disgusted as a Mets fan. And I agree with you 100%. The Mets are done. And not only that, with Peterson in the fifth, after walking two batters in that inning, how does Mendoza have him face Machado with the bases loaded? Meanwhile, he had...
Well, what are you going to do? Who are you going to go to? I mean, last week I was fighting off BT and... Hold on, Tony. Hold on. I'll let you finish. Last week I was fighting off BT and callers about having Peterson stay in. And guys are calling, talking about his stuff. And I'm like, guys, are you watching the game? Peterson has been god-awful. You wanted to stay in the game. And now you're saying, first call of the day, you wanted Peterson out before the Machado. Like, that's in part the problem. There are no good options for Mendoza or the Mets right now. There are none.
But he had Stanek up in the bullpen.
Stanek stinks.
Peterson stinks even more.
Okay, so we agree, Tony. There are no good options. You can't go to Stanek in that spot. It's way too early. Like, you have to rely on your... David Peterson was an all-star. They're relying on him. He can't give up a grand slam. He did. He's been brutal. Guess what? I wouldn't have Peterson start. What's the answer? What's the alternative?
You can't have him start again.
They're going to, Tony. What's your alternative? Because I did it. I did the math. Oh, my God, I wouldn't have him start. What would you do?
I'd rather see Minaya take his spot.
Okay, right. Me too. But I said that a week ago, and thank you for the call. Now, all of a sudden, so the same people that wanted Minaya to the pen or have Minaya out of the rotation, now you need him back in there. Like, don't you see the problem? And it's Minaya's own fault that he wasn't very good to the point where they had to move him back to the bullpen. Now he maybe has turned the corner, but maybe we don't even know that. And even if he has turned the corner, what's he, a 4-5 inning pitcher? It's all falling apart. They're trying to piece it together any which way they possibly can just to stay afloat. Pretty please, sports gods, let us just get to the finish line where we can reset, take a deep breath, and load up for the postseason. Because if they do get there, a lot of these problems go away. You don't have to have David Peterson start in the postseason. You don't need to figure out how you're going to go through a five. Remember, they were going with a six-man rotation. Now it's like, well, there's not even four good guys, let alone five. When you've got to combine starters to make a start, that's a problem. When you've got to rely on a rookie pitcher who has three big league starts to his name, one of which he melted down, which is understandable, by the way. Like, it happens. Not his fault. Like, he's a young kid. He went basically from Double-A to the pennant race in New York. It's unheard of. It's not Pittsburgh where there's five people in the stands. It's in New York City. You have millions of fans going out to see the Mets this year, trying to make the postseason. And Tong's out there pitching. Can't get outs in the first inning. Melted down. So you're combining starters. You're relying on rookie starters to carry. Like, a guy who was an all-star has petered out to where he can't get anybody out anymore. No, this is not news for Peter. Since August, he's been brutal. He was given a 4-run lead against the Phillies. He couldn't even protect that. It's just the reality of the state that the Mets are in right now. There are no answers. We can argue about, Mendy should have left him in. He should have taken him out. He should have gone to this guy. What would you do with the rotation? Point is, they're screwed. There are no good options. There are no good answers. They're hoping. And that's why I started today with telling you my feel. When I believed that the Mets were going to make the playoffs, it was not based on hope. It was based on what I believed to be the reality of the situation. They were better than the Giants and Reds. The Diamondbacks weren't even a thought. They were better than the Giants and Reds, and they were in a good spot, even with all the losing. They just had to stop the bleeding. They couldn't. They couldn't stop the bleeding. It got too bad. And now the Diamondbacks come into the picture, a real threat. And they continue to struggle with no answers in sight. You can look at it and say, well, yeah, McClain's going to make two starts. Good, that's two wins. Or you hope. Knock on wood. You don't even know that they're not guaranteed to win those games. The bullpen could blow those games, or the offense might not come to life. But this Mets team, even though they were built on that lineup, has been all about the starting pitching all year long. It's why they were playing like the best team in baseball from April to June 13th. It was the pitching. Different guys, Canning, whatever you want to say, throwing those guys. It was the pitching that allowed them to be in those games to win at a clip to being the best team in the sport. And then from June 13th on, different guys, whether it's the Senga injury that started things, you know, Monta, whatever it may be, all the different, Canning not being there, like there's a lot of different reasons for it, but they have not pitched nearly well enough to be a competent team, let alone the best team. I've never seen anything like it. Start after start, 3 2/3, 4 innings. Like, they couldn't even give you 5 or 6 innings. So it's going to be about the starting pitching. That's the one thing that's been consistent and definitive about this Mets season. Do you trust the starting pitching in the final 10 games? Evan is calling from Hoboken, New Jersey. What's up, Evan?
Hey, Sal. What's going on, bro? How you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. I was just listening to your intro, and I completely agree with you. I don't think the Mets have enough pitching-wise to really get deep in October, but I kind of just wanted to run this point by you. I was at the game last night. What if that Soto ball goes 3 inches to the right, hits off the pole, they come back and win the game? Like, are you still on here today talking about how the Mets don't have enough, or are you like...
I don't believe...
Like, all right, they got...
It's a great question. First of all, it's a great question. Now, it would have tied the game. It would not have won them the game. It would have tied the game.
No,
now, you're saying if they come back
if
and
they
win.
They hypothetically came back and won. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I would start the show the same way, but I still don't believe that they have enough. Now, I'm not also basing it just off of the result. To me, it's not that they lost the game.
Right.
It's about Peterson not being able to be trusted moving forward. It's about Tong going today. It's about the Diamondbacks on their heels. So, okay, you could say that if they won that game yesterday. Let me ask you it this way. If you feel comfortable with where the Mets are at right now, and by the way, I'm not saying they can't go on a deep October run. I'm saying it's the first time I feel like they're not getting to October. There are two different stories here. But if the Diamondbacks won yesterday and were a half game back, how would you feel today?
Oh, I feel terrible. I mean, that's kind of what makes today so important. I think it's now you have to declare it a must-win.
Correct.
Just hope the D-backs lose because it's really bad at this point. You can't trust anyone in the rotation, probably outside McClain.
Correct.
And I'm a big Tong guy, but I just don't think putting him in the spot is it's going to do him any favors.
Bingo. You nailed it, Evan, and thank you for the call. So in your hypothetical, the only difference would have been the result of last night's game, which would have meant a lot as far as the standings go. It would have been 2.5 a difference maker. I'm combining not only the result of the loss, because they're not going to win every game. Like, we knew that. I didn't expect the Mets to be more than 500 going down the stretch in the final 12 games, and I thought that would be enough. I'm not so sure they could even get to 500. But with Peterson's poor performance yet again, it's another starter that you can't trust who is going to make another start. So not only did he lose the game last night, he's going to make another start. And then you mentioned it. I think today is the season. Today's the season, as far as I'm concerned. And it's in the hands of young Jonah Tong. And I just can't trust that. I mean, if they lose this game today, now maybe Tong could have a good start and they could lose. He could have a good start, they could win. Maybe he has a good start and the other parts fall, but like the other pieces don't do their job. Like, there are many different ways to get to the ultimate outcome here. I just don't. In a season that has been defined by the starting pitching, I don't know how you could feel good about Jonah Tong off of what you saw Friday night in what is going to be the biggest game of the year for the Mets this afternoon.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey everyone, it's Boomer and Geo, and if you're into New York sports or you want straight talk about what's really going on in the sports world, Boomer and Geo is your show.
We're covering it all. Yankees wins, Giants drama, national headlines, and whatever chaos the day brings on the field and off.
No filler, no filters, just real conversation, and believe me, plenty of laughs every weekday morning.
We don't hold back, and we don't waste your time. We get to what actually matters.
That's Boomer and Geo, and you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Mets off yesterday, and they start this series against the Padres tonight. They got the Padres, and they got the Nationals, and they got the Cubs, and then they've got, of course, the Marlins to end the year. So I honestly, I mean, this is not a cop-out, and I feel like every Mets fan that has watched this season knows exactly what I'm talking about. I have no idea how this team is going to play over the next 12 games. And if they rattled off 12 in a row, I wouldn't be shocked. If they went 6-6, I wouldn't be shocked. If they went 0-12, I wouldn't be shocked. But I am, at this point, as disappointing as this has been. We've seen it so many times. Team gets in, gets hot. It's sort of like the hockey playoffs. It's like a hot goalie. All of a sudden, you can do something. So I'm encouraged with the fact that they're still in a playoff spot. They still have an opportunity. Maybe now, finally, they wake up. But, I mean, anything, quite possibly anything, is on the table with this group because they are so unbelievably inconsistent and unpredictable.
So I had called my buddy yesterday, Drew Kalisky, who is the producer for NFL Today. And he is a huge Dodger fan. Mm. And I have to catch up with him every now and again just to talk some baseball and some football and things of that nature. But we were talking about Dodger-Met matchup possibly in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah.
And he was like, man, I don't want to see the Mets. He doesn't want to see the Mets. He goes, I know that they have not been great. I know that. He goes, our team hasn't been that great either. And our bullpen, which was so important last year, just has not been what it was last year. And I say, well, our bullpen has basically been a disaster.
Yeah.
I mean, and Saturday night was really it just showed you, like, you got a 2-0 lead and you're going into the last two innings and you can't win the game.
Right.
That's why, you know, getting those last six out are so important, or getting those last nine outs. But he did say the Dodgers now do have six starters, and the starters have been going deep into games. I guess as of late, I haven't been watching it like he has, but I was saying, like, we have young starters that are giving us length, maybe with the exception of Jonah Tong's last outing. But Brandon Sproat and Nolan McLean have been great. It's our older starting pitchers that have basically hit the wall.
Yeah, I mean, somebody's going to have to step up out of that veteran group. And, you know, whether it's David Peterson, or whether, you know, Senga somehow figures it out, or it's Clay Holmes, just one of those guys. If the Mets are going to be serious about winning a playoff series, I think Sproat, and I think that McLean are going
right
to be now. Fine in the
dude,
playoffs. Just dude, give me one of those other guys.
If they started the playoffs tomorrow, my number one pitcher is Nolan McLean.
Nobody's arguing with that at this point.
That's my guy. I'm like, I don't care about anybody else. I don't care who makes what money, who sits where. Screw that.
Yeah.
I'm putting the best guy out there. And you know what? This kid has got the moxie. He's got the pitches. He has already shown that he can get off to a bad start and hang in there. As I sit here today, that's the guy.
Yeah, I mean, and I understand that there's more pressure when it's a playoff series, but there's no more pressure, I think, than in nervousness than in your major league debut. So, I mean, and he was able to look great and then continue to look great. He's got the confidence. He pitches with confidence. So I would not be in any way hesitant about throwing him out there in the biggest games.
The guy looks great, man.
Yeah.
Got that Fu Manchu going on, man.
Damn right.
Yeah,
goatee.
I don't know if it's
a Fu Manchu. It's a goatee.
Goatee, yeah.
But yeah.
Whatever it is.
But
a mustache and a beard.
Yeah, he knows his facial hair.
Yes, he does.
Good.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
So I was asking all of the AI services, because we're not creative anymore, we just ask AI to do it for us, to come up with nicknames for the Manaea Holmes tag team. There's a few that are okay. Mana Holmes, the Clania combo. This one may be my favorite. Southpaw and Sink. Get it? Because Sean's a southpaw and Clay Holmes was a sinker. Southpaw and Sink. And then Anthony Gallo, who works here, just said simply H&M, which is a famous department store. H&M, Holmes and Manaea. So there you go. Nothing's there yet, but we'll get there. We've got a few more days. They will next toe the rubbers on Sunday afternoon against the Washington Nationals, where the Mets will try the tag team again. We'll get to the confidence level Yankee fans have in Devin Williams, how Anthony Volpe will be handled moving forward, and our day at Citi Field. But let's get to some of your calls. 888-808-1019, the toll-free number. Pete is in Merrick. Good afternoon, Pete.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you guys doing?
It's wonderful.
Great. I was actually listening to the Rico right before I turned you guys on. We were talking, you're having the same discussion about the tag teaming. And I was just curious. I'm all for it. I was just curious what you would do, if it's a good problem to have, if the first starter is just cruising and looking good. You keep him in longer and, you know, maybe mess up the next guy's scheduling? Like, how would you handle something like that?
No, and it's a great, great question, because last night was perfect, right? The Mets scored a lot of runs, and Clay Holmes, you know, put a guy on base with two outs in the fourth inning. I was even saying to Tiki, boy, would he go to Manaea mid-inning? He had him warming up. But even though Clay's pitch count was down, I think we were all universally good with taking Clay Holmes out
right
at four innings and two runs. But he brings up the more complicated issue, which is, let's say on Sunday against the Nationals, Sean Manaea gets the start, and he retires literally the first 15 guys.
Yeah, you keep him in.
Do you?
Yeah, I think you have to. Because if he's rolling and he's not feeling any kind of stress, it would be a disservice to make Clay Holmes now work harder, in theory.
But so, haven't we seen enough of Sean Manaea, unless you assume everything's going to change, that in the fifth and sixth inning of some starts, he's lost it?
Mm-hmm.
So aren't you preemptively trying to kind of get ahead of what's likely going to happen?
Let's take last night, for example, because Clay Holmes, he pitched relatively well. He only gave up the two runs on two solo home runs.
Right, and then he gave up the double with two outs in the fourth inning, and that was it.
Right, but he kind of worked his way out of those things. And so, but you could tell, just like I could tell, man, he's laboring a little bit. We were actually dissecting where he lines up, stands on the mound.
Yeah.
And where he's on the right side of the mound, is he on the left side of the mound? Because early in the game, it was all two strikes, he moves to the right side of the mound. But then it kind of got random, and we just couldn't figure it out what it was. So it almost felt like he was trying to confuse, like use his setup to create, I don't know, confusion in the batter's mind, and then kind of sneaks nut strikes in. So it felt like he had lost it. It felt like he had lost command. So after the fourth inning, it made perfect sense to pull Clay Holmes. If you'd go one more inning, who knows what would have happened.
No, and even though the bottom of the order was coming up, like, to me it was, I'm getting ahead of this.
Yes.
Now, if a guy's pitching a perfect game, if a guy's dominating, obviously I think that's the area where it becomes more complicated, because there's a part of you that wants to ride it out. But my initial reaction to answer that question is, if I'm executing a tag team, I'm sorry, you're done. You gave me the four or five innings you required, and I'm not pressing my luck any further.
Right.
Because
you're only tag teaming if you have repeated examples of him not being able to get through seven innings.
Correct. Like, even before last year's breakout year for Sean Manaea, he was a five-inning pitcher.
Yeah.
It's not like he ever would go deep, deep into games. So I think if you already kind of have an idea of what that pitcher is, I think you got to show the wherewithal to say, I don't care how good you look, I'm taking you out after four or five innings.
Yep.
Now, that's a good problem to have. The other side of it is if the guy gets knocked out in the first inning. Well, the good news is the next guy coming in is also a starter.
Right.
So in a case like that, maybe you would ask for him to go deeper because you had to take your original starter out of the game so early. Let's go to Chris in Bayshore. Hey, Chris.
Yeah, hey, guys. A couple of things. I you can't call a tag team. You got to get another nickname. I mean, it's not going to work.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Chris.
It's just not going to work. And the other thing is, I think that the other caller made a great point. I think you have to go into it with a very, very kind of loose rein on the whole thing. And, Evan, you're kind of describing, well, if this happens and this happens. Well, I mean, I just think that in the land of never-ending second guess, you know, you take a guy out and the other guy still at first inning. I mean, it's just it's got to be a little less than written in stone, if you know what I mean.
I think we're in the land of second guess no matter what you do. I mean, that's just the world we live in. And honestly, I think the reason why there's more second guessing of MLB managers today than there was 10 or 15 years ago is not just Twitter and sports talk radio. It's the fact that they're making more bullpen changes.
Mm.
There's more decisions to be made because it's not simply go get me eight innings.
Yes.
Like, what are you second guessing when a starting pitcher goes that deep into a game? So I'm not worried about the amount of second guessing managers are going to have. I think you're just using the smarts of realizing what starting pitchers in 2025 and beyond are. They're not guys that are going six, seven innings. Those are rare. And by the way, when they do it, like on those rare occasions, remember when David Peterson pitched the complete game? We all went nuts.
Yeah.
Do we know what he did in his next start? He didn't pitch well.
No.
Or how about that guy for the Guardians? Remember Gavin Williams took a no-hitter into the ninth inning? Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
Oh.
But I do.
First the Mets, right?
First the Mets. That's the reason I bring it up.
Oh.
It was a Wednesday afternoon game. Was I off that day because I took Spence to the game?
No, the Yankees had a day game, too.
Yankees had a day game, too. So the Mets almost got no hit by Gavin Williams. It got broken up on a home run by Juan Soto. The next start.
Oh, I do remember that.
The next start Gavin Williams made. Of course, no one paid attention. Why would we? But I'll tell you what happened. He got bombed. So even when guys, by some miracle, go deep into games and we're all celebrating
it's not natural for them.
Yeah, they end up paying the tax eventually. So what I'm suggesting is avoid all of that unless you have someone who proves they can do it.
So this is exactly why presidents of baseball operations and general managers like David Stearns don't like paying high-priced pitchers.
Well, certain guys are worth it. See, I'd argue this, Teague. Yeah, a guy like Clay Holmes, a guy like Sean Manaea, a guy that you deem a four or five-inning pitcher, sure, why would I want to pay them $20 million a year? But if you actually have a Tarik Skubal, if you actually have a Max Fried, or what we think Nolan McClain's going to be, what Paul Skenes is.
Even then, though he got beat yesterday.
It happens. Then you almost want to pay them more because they're so unique and so special.
Yeah.
Because guys don't normally do it. I think it would actually enhance the value of the high-end guys, but bring down the value of the guys that you're only asking four innings from.
Yeah, well, it would middle those guys that you're asking four or five. You're not at, don't even come to me with a whatever 20 something million, 28, $30 million a year request. You're 15. You're capped at 15. It's like that mid tier of quarterbacks in the NFL. For the longest time, nobody knew what to pay him.
Right.
Now we know what it is. It's about $15 to $20 million. It's Justin Fields.
Yep.
Right. It's not, you don't want to disrespect the guy because he's going to be your starting quarterback, but you're not worth 60.
Right. The guys who are worth that high end are the guys that are that good. And, you know, right now when you have a starting pitcher that is capable of going seven innings every 5 or 6 days, put your arms around them and hug them.
Yep.
And keep them long term and pay them because they're rare. Jerome in Hazlitt, New Jersey. Hey, Jerome.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. How you doing?
Good, man. What's up?
Well, listen, first off, the nickname, you call it the law firm day. It covers all of baseball. This way when it catches on, you know, it's who's pitching today? It's so-and-so, the law firm day. Anyway, I thought about this in the past, and I brought it up to people, and they told me I'm crazy. I like the idea. The only little tweak I would do is have, instead of being four innings, five innings, you go five innings, four innings. So if there's never a change in the way they score wins, the starting pitcher has the opportunity to get the win instead of just get a no decision or the possibility of a loss.
Yeah.
And then the guy doing the four innings at the end of the game gets the save. Because if you go more, I think it's more than three innings, yes, regardless of the score, you get
correct
a save.
Correct.
So it kind of massages the egos for both guys.
That's a good way to think about it. The question is, can your starter, whichever one you deem, can he get to five innings or get through five innings?
Yeah,
I think it's easier said than done. Because the only reason you're doing this is because these guys can't get deep in the game.
I think we got to kill the stat. I'm sorry. I appreciate what Jerome is saying. We're trying to massage everyone's ego. We want to get the guy a win. Who gives a rat's ass about wins? Does anybody care about wins? Is that like, Sean, you're a Yankee fan, right? You like the Yankees? How many wins does Max Fried have this year? Do you even know?
I have no idea. Don't care. I care about the
15, 16?
Is that your guess?
That's my guess.
I'm going to go look it up right now.
Well, I know Rodon's got
17, right? Yeah, I know he's got a lot of wins. Let me see.
He's tried to get 17. I think Rodon's got 16.
So he's got 16. How many does Max Fried have? What was your guess?
I guess 16 as well.
He has 17. Oh, he leads the league.
Oh, he won last. That's right. He won his last time out.
Does anybody care?
No.
I used to care.
The reason I care is because the Yankees have the top two win getters in Major League Baseball.
Well, and by the way, the reason that's the case is a testament to the fact that Fried and Rodon have gone deep in the games.
Yes.
And that's why guys like that, you wrap your arms around and you say, boy, I love them. They're valuable. Mm-hmm. They're capable of it. They're exonerated from this discussion.
Yep.
But Will Warren isn't. Cam Schlittler, as of now, isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Luis Gil isn't. Most guys aren't. And there's a reason why Max Fried has paid a lot of money.
Hoff, before you get to the Mets lineup, I have to take issue with something that I saw you tweet last night. And also, I'm going to take issue with my buddy JJ over at SNY. The idea, well, let me take you behind the scenes for a second. So I was doing Sports Night last night from home after the Met game. And the producer texted me like, all right, well, here's a couple of topics we're going to talk about. What's on your mind? I'm like, well, we got to discuss Peterson, Tong. I don't trust him tomorrow. Like, I'm telling him everything. And he's like, what about Soto? I'm like, what about Soto? When it was like, to me, he's not the story of the game. He hit his, okay, yes, 41st home run. That's great. He just missed a game tying home run foul. Great. Okay, he made the last out. He hit a bullet back to the belly. Like, what do you want me to do? Get on Soto? And then, so he's like, all right, we don't have to talk about Soto. And then I'm watching the segment after I go, and JJ goes on for a minute and a half ripping Juan Soto for not being clutch all year. And I see Hoff's tweet saying basically the same thing, questioning Soto, not good enough. Dude, I mean, what are you kidding me? How are you?
I hate you.
How are you getting on Soto?
No, I hate you. I hate people that can't understand sarcasm. Did you read the tweet?
Did you read the tweet?
Oh, what? Oh, Soto, you couldn't put the ball through the pitcher? I mean, come on.
He hit the ball 1,000 miles per hour.
It was bad. But again, like, the situation was bad.
My bad. I didn't realize that it was. Dude, sarcasm sometimes is hard to.
And listen, I don't reply to anybody on social media because I don't look at that stuff.
Right.
I did see some people that were very negative, like, you're an idiot sandwich for saying something so dumb like that. The point is, I don't care what anybody has to say. If it's sarcasm, I want to put it out there, and I'm not going to reply to be like, guys, just get the joke.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get it. And in part because, like, I was perplexed that the producers would have asked me that question. I was like, who's thinking that?
He missed a home run
He's got 99 ribs. he's having a historic season by any standard. You could argue he's the MVP. Unfortunately, the Mets didn't do their part as a team. So you can't say he's the most valuable player because without him, they went to the playoffs last year and got to the NLCS. With him, they might not even make the playoffs. So hard to justify him being the MVP, but his numbers say that he's an MVP. I mean, look at the freaking numbers.
Okay, well, let's do me a favor. What did JJ say? Let's get on him.
So he was basically saying that he's waiting for, while acknowledging Soto's greatness, saying that waiting for that moment, when is that big moment going to come? Dude, look at his numbers in September. Like, we're beyond the Soto clutch thing and the Soto. He's driven in plenty of runs. He's had some big hits and big moments. All right, the biggest of moments, he came within 6 inches of having a game-tying home run last night.
I think it was less than that.
Against one of the best closers in the game. Yeah, maybe it was less than that. One of the best closers in the game. He's also in those big spots facing the best that the game has to offer. Like, he'll get it done eventually. He's also had big moments. So, like, the idea that anybody, and I don't know if this is the thing on social media or not, I just saw you, like, I usually don't stay on there. Although I will say, we take a minute to interrupt this Juan Soto conversation. You know, we posted that Emmy video yesterday. I read some of the comments under there, and you would think that people would have some kind of heart. I mean, I was pouring my heart and soul out to you, saying how much I was crushed and being honest that I was angry at first and then sad, flat out heartbroken, to the verge, on the verge of tears on my birthday, losing out on the Emmy for the third straight time, third straight year to Bo Peep. And the comments were, takes talent to get that. You, who were you? You suck. How are you even up for an Emmy? Blah, 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 blah. Just nasty, nasty, vile comments and mean, mean people. But I don't read the comments and I don't let it bother me and I don't care about it. But I did see some of those yesterday. Okay, back to the story at hand with Juan Soto.
Yes.
And the idea that anybody would be ripping Juan Soto off of last night, a question like, what the hell? What are we doing here?
Here's the thing is, it's, and you tell me if I'm wrong, it's tough to have a big moment, like the Met moment for Juan Soto, when you've done all the other work, like you've kept the Mets in tight ball games, you put yourself in a position so Pete Alonso can drive you in. Like, it's not like he, you know, it's not like we're sitting at Juan Soto and be like, what have you done all year? No, he continues to be great.
And can I tell you what I love most about Soto? I don't know if we have it. I'm just, odds are we probably don't. See if we have a Soto cut in there off of last night, or if you could find it during the post game show. He is learning. I was critical of him for being selfish when he stole that base when the Mets were down and he got his 30th steal, being a numbers chaser. Look, I think Soto is, he loves the numbers and he loves to do historic things. That's great. He is also a competitor and does want to win. And he did say that last night when he was asked about, hey, well, 41 homers, your career high. He's like, yeah, that's great and everything. Go ahead, Dove, hit it.
I mean, it's good, but we just didn't accomplish the mission, so it doesn't matter for me right now. You're just trying to win, trying to go all the way.
See, there you go. Now, how much he truly believes that, whatever. I'm not going to pretend to know, but at least he's saying the right thing now. And I really do believe he feels it. You can see his frustration after an at-bat that he doesn't come through in the big spot. He wants it. He's done it before. He's the one proven commodity in this town. He's the one. He's got the ring. He's been the beast in the postseason. Not just with the Mets, in this town. So the idea that anybody would get on Soto after last night to me is absurd.
And by the way, yeah, I think I do genuinely feel that he feels that way because over the entire stretch of his career, he's been an open book. He's told you how he felt. Even if it's stuff that you don't want to hear, why would it change with 10 games to go?
He's not a BSer. Excellent point. But I do think, like, he has done some selfish things. And you could say, well, the way he operated last year, there was no connection or whatever to the Yankees. It was just about the most money, which we predicted we would take that. He obviously did it with the Mets. And even this year, like, stealing that base the other day to get to steal number 30 with two outs in the way down, you know, five runs, seven runs, whatever it was, that's unacceptable. But at least you're seeing him learn from that selfish mistake. All right, let's get back to the phones here. 888-808-1019. Yeah, go ahead. Before we hit the phones, give me the lineup real quick.
All right, so the lineup is Lindor, Soto, Alonso, Nemo, duh. DHing is Vientos, McNeil second base, Beatty third base, Torrens at catcher, and Mullins center field.
Torrens back in there, day game after a night game, giving Alvy a nice rest. Yeah, Mullins has been getting some run here. I know he homered the other night, but you're going to see if they can get let him find his way out of it. Elvis is calling from Orange County. What's up, Elvis?
Hey, Sal. Before I say something about Peterson, with Soto, if anybody ever questions this guy this year, I mean, when I go to these games, I expect everybody expects him to hit a homer every time he gets up. That's how good of a year he's having. He, I mean, the guy's amazing. Now, getting back to Peterson,
let me just comment on that real quick, Elvis, before you make your next point. I think it's an excellent point. He's Soto is so good, damn good, that the expectation is every single time he's up, you expect him to throw a homer. He's like, forget circumstance, forget who he's facing, forget what he did prior in the game. Right. It's like, if he doesn't hit a homer or at least get a base hit and tie the game every single time because he's that good, he's failed. It's absurd.
I know. It's amazing because when I go to the games, I mean, when he gets up, you just feel like he's going to hit a homer every time he's up, especially the way he swings. But getting back to Peterson, here we go. I still trust him. I'm going to tell you why. The thing that's been killing him right now is, like, if you look at that inning last night where Machado hit the grand slam, he's walking too many people now. He walked two guys, hit a batter. He only gave up one hit that inning. He gave up the home run. That's the thing that's been making him go downhill, but right now, I still trust him. You got to have him in there. It's either that. Is when the hell is McGill coming back?
He's out. He's hurt again. He's out.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he has a setback, I think, so he's toast. Same thing with Reed Garrett, by the way. We didn't mention it before. Reed Garrett, he's back on the IL. His regular season is done. Like, they're dropping like flies. Look, Elvis, you can, and I remember the call earlier. Was it earlier this week or was that last week that you called? Okay. So,
it was Friday.
Yeah, you could choose to trust Peterson if you'd like. I do not. And I'm going based now. Overall, big picture, yes, I like David Peterson as a pitcher. Right now, with the playoffs on the line, I don't trust him. However, I can't come up with a good alternative other than splitting Holmes and Manaea up, and I'm not even sure that that's the answer. Is that a good enough alternative where you might get 4 innings from one, 5 from the other?
I mean, you're going to have to do that. They all hit a wall at 4 or 5 innings, except for Sprout and McLean.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, that's the way it's got to be. He's got to start. He got no choice.
But that's part of my problem. I don't trust him. Man, that, I think they're running out of gas. I don't think they have enough. But anyway, go ahead. We'll finish up with Tong.
All right. One more thing. Yeah, with Tong tonight, you know, I know he pitched terrible the last game, but his first game, he pitched pretty good. His second game, I think he went 6 innings. He only gave up 3 hits, but I know they were 3 home runs, but he pitched pretty good. The other night, he couldn't put the ball over the plate. That's what killed him.
I don't worry about his stuff. Good call, Elvis. Thank you for the call. Get back to us. I don't worry about his stuff. BT and I got into that earlier this week, like whatever it was. Yeah, I think it was earlier this week. I'm not focused on his stuff. He's a 22-year-old that had a meltdown in the first inning. Couldn't get out of the inning. I'm worried about the moment, the situation maybe being too big for him, putting too much pressure on himself. It's normal. It's not a knock on him. It's not a knock saying Tong stinks. Get him out of here. It's saying that, good God, there's 10 games to go. He's dealing with the playoff pressure basically right out of AA in New York City. In the biggest game of the year, Jonah Tong, who couldn't get out of the first innings, making the start today. But I'm with you. I thought his first start was good. Now, I would say that in comparison to the other rookies, McLean is head and shoulders and waist and whatever's below the waist, ahead above everybody else. Sproat, to me, was more impressive in his 2 starts. Right, he's had 2 so far, or 3? In his 2 starts. But Tong's first start was fine. Second start I thought was impressive in that he didn't have his best stuff, but still battled to a point where you would take 6 innings and 4 runs, especially considering the state of the Mets rotation. The third start, however, was a uh-oh. Not that he doesn't have it or can't be a good big leaguer. It's that is the fear of when you bring somebody up basically from AA who's made a few AAA starts, as good as he's been, the organizational pitcher of the year, whatever it may be, that's the fear. That he has a meltdown to a point where he can't find his way out of the first inning. Like, I didn't even really give it much thought. I just, as I'm listening to that, because I was listening, it was Friday night, excuse me, and I was picking up pizza. Angelino's, is that the place? I'm now addicted to that place, the Thinny Thin in Caldwell. You ever been, Hoff? You're not a Jersey guy.
No, I'm not.
Jersey does have excellent pizza. I mean, they got snakes and you know, raccoons and whatever else it is, bear and all that stuff, skunk, but they do have excellent pizza. So I'm addicted to the Thinny Thin. It was the second time that I've had it in a week. So I was driving there Friday night after SNY a week ago, listening to the first few innings of the game or first couple innings of the game, and I'm like, oh, my God, this can't be happening. This can't be happening. And my initial thought after, you know, they had to take him out without getting through the first inning was, this is it. We're not going to see it. You can't pitch him again. Like, I really didn't give it much of a thought. How can you possibly trust him? And yet, here we are. He's going to be taking the mound today. The BT and Sal Show on the Fan, presented by your Tri-State Cadillac dealers. Cadillac, the official luxury vehicle of the New York Mets. Andreas calling from Hamilton, New Jersey. What's up, Andreas?
Good morning. How are you, sir?
Good. What's up?
Well, can we change up the lineup at least? And I mean, Beatty's been pretty darn good for us. Can we have maybe Beatty batting in the 2 slot, and then maybe shake up the lineup a little more? Maybe put Nemo at 3, Soto at 4, Alonso at 5, and see what that does. I think Soto gives us the best opportunity to produce in these absolute clutch moments. Now, why don't we put him in that cleanup spot? Beatty at the 2 spot.
I think anything that involves, and I appreciate the creativity, Andreas, and thank you for the call. I think anything that involves moving Juan Soto in that lineup is crazy. Same thing with Alonso, actually. I would not move Soto or Alonso. Now, if you want to tell me that, and I saw that it's on social media. I don't know if somebody that I know had it or I just happened to see it. Somebody suggested moving Beatty up into Nimmo's spot. I would not do that myself, but if you want to suggest that, I don't think that that's crazy. Beatty has been that good since the All-Star break, and I just don't trust Brandon Nimmo. So you want to tell me that there's a situation where you would go Lindor, Soto, Alonso, Beatty, Vientos, Nimmo? I can't. I'm not going to push back on that tremendously. I'm okay if you want to change that up a little bit. I am not moving Juan Soto at all, and nor am I moving Alonso. I mean, that's where the Mets' bread and butter is, Lindor, Soto, Alonso. And you move them down, gives them less of a chance to come up. Soto wouldn't have been up in that spot yesterday at the end of the game. Ryan is calling from Tarrytown. What's up, Ryan?
Good morning, Sal. Thanks for taking my call. I'm headed into Citi Field right now. I'm nervous, excited, but also have that bad feeling that you're talking about. I think it's a real shame what the pitching staff's doing with this offense. I mean, our ERA is like 6. You can't expect a team to score 7 runs a game, and these guys do it more than half the time. We were the best team in baseball since June 15th last year, and Stearns, not to criticize too much, but he came back with a totally different pitching staff. I think it's a shame what they're letting this offense go to waste.
But the offense also needs to take a hit, Ryan, and thank you for the call. They have been inconsistent, and they also haven't shown the ability to battle back. I mean, the fact that the Mets are 0 for 60, whatever it may be, 65 now or something like that, when trailing after 8 innings, that's not on the starting pitchers. That's on the offense. This team was built to score runs. All the money is invested in the lineup. Minimal investments in the starting rotation. You familiar with the term, you get what you pay for? Well, the Mets haven't gotten what they've paid for out of the lineup consistently. They did get what they paid for with the rotation. Didn't spend any money on it. That's what you get. You try to go in a different route with getting a reliever converted to a starter. You go get Frankie Montas. You ask for that. They got what they paid for in the rotation. But the lineup has not done its job. They were supposed to be an elite offensive team. To the point where going into the season, we're talking about it being one of the best offensive teams in the history of the franchise, maybe since 2006 at the very least, which was a loaded offensive team in 2006. We know how it ended, but that team was loaded. This team was drawing comparisons to that team. It's not even close. Soto, Alonso, I guess Lindor. Yes, everybody else, not even close. Not even in the same universe. As we learned yesterday, the universe trumps all. Bigger than the stratosphere and the world. A little PSA from SAL. Always learning here on the BT and Sal show.
The Mets, and if you watched the game last night, you know this. The Mets set an MLB record, not a New York Mets record, an Major League Baseball record for amount of different pitchers used in one season. 46.
Absurd.
Now, that record, it's not something that has stood for many years because obviously this is going to be a record that was broken recently because of the way that the injuries and everybody else and the bullpens. So last year, the record was set by the Miami Marlins. Mm-hmm. 45 different pitchers. You know how bad that team was last year? 62-100. The team that loses 100 games uses 45 pitchers.
Yeah.
Not the team that's trying to make the playoffs. Now, on one hand, you could say, well, they've overcome all of that and still are where they are. If you want to look at it, you know, fluid to the top, Brody Van Wagenen style. But, I mean, I look at it as, holy crap.
46 pitchers.
Are they going to be able to find enough guys to be able to compete in the postseason enough to make any sort of run? Like, I think the offense can wake up and be fine, and they were even fine last night. But David Peterson, again.
Terrible.
Stinks. These guys are just done. Every single one of them seem washed for this
now,
year.
I agree. Now, I would say to his defense, and it's a ball for sure. Boy, if that's strike three on Tatis,
yeah,
it could change. But I agree with you. He doesn't make, this year he has not made the big pitches in the big spots. The Grand Slam was an absolute killer. And then to your point, when someone by the name of Dom Hamill comes into the game, first I'm like, who in the hell is Dom Hamill? He's a kid. Okay, fine, fair enough. And then they put the graphic up and you're thinking, man, this team's got starting pitcher problems for the most part, although the kids have done a nice job to kind of, you know, dispel that a little bit. And then when you think about how many different guys do you think have started this year, would you say? 12?
13?
Point is it's 30-something relievers.
Right. It's got to be, I mean, it's probably 12.
I mean, conservatively 12.
Yeah.
I mean, you go all the way back to, you know, Griffin Canning, and we see the guys right now that are starting rotation guys that have been on the IL on CBS Sports Network as well. But yeah, I mean, it's the bullpen, and yeah, they traded for a couple of guys that they thought would help, of course. So that is part of it. So it's not as if, you know, the futility is all their own guys. I mean, David Stearns tried to go out
sure.
and fix it, and then brought in a guy who was just a human grenade in Helsley. So I mean, it was a number that meant more than a number to me. It really kind of showed how bad they've been this year and how bad the pitching in particular has been since the beginning of the season.
It also, to me, it completely magnifies the entire thought about relief pitching. Throw enough things against the wall, and at some point you hope something sticks. And that, when I saw that number, because much of it is from the bullpen and relief pitching, I'm thinking, my God, they are just sending anybody out there to see if anybody can get three outs. And that ultimately is why I don't think this team will go very far in the postseason. I think a lot of people probably think that, too. They might win a series, assuming they get there. You now got three teams, you know, within the same, what is it, two games, game and a half, whatever it is.
Yeah, so it's
two in the loss column.
Yeah, it's two for the Reds and the Giants, and it's two in the loss, but one and a half for the Diamondbacks.
Right, so you've got those three teams, you know, on your heels, essentially. I'm not saying the Mets aren't going to get there, but you've got those three teams on your heels, and the bullpen is a problem. So if they get there, you've got, we always talk about driving in this area. Like, if you want to drive from where we live to Citi Field, it's not like one trouble spot. You've got six different trouble spots to get there where you might hit traffic. The Mets have trouble from the bullpen. They've got trouble with the offense. Sometimes goes into a major funk, and you don't hear from them for days, if not a week or two. And then you've got the starting pitching has been up and down, depending upon who's the pitcher that day. So they have a lot of issues. The upside's good. The downside is dreadful.
Yeah, I mean, and the whole it's getting to the playoffs and get hot thing, I think, is true to a certain degree. But I also think that they're, like, outside of the two young pitchers in Sproat and McClain, like, these other guys, I think, are just finished. Like, I just think they're done for the year.
That's how it feels.
Physically.
I agree with you. It feels that way.
So, I mean, it's not like they can just wake up where an offense can just wake up. And sometimes it doesn't make any sense. Like, we saw them not score runs for I don't know how many games in a row and then that losing streak. And then all of a sudden, bang, 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 they're hitting home runs and Soto and Alonso and Lindor in their back. But when it comes to finding enough starting pitchers or relievers that you've gone through 46 in this year, to be able to just have enough. It's not a surprise that the guys that they brought up that have pitched well are young guys who haven't been logging a ton of major league innings. I mean, Manaea, I don't think he's healthy. Clay Holmes has pitched more than he's ever pitched his entire life. Kodai Senga's got weird injuries and strange things going on.
Yeah, exactly. Well said.
Never feels right.
Yep.
I mean, so I don't know if those guys can just wake up. It would be the biggest miracle in a Mets postseason run if those pitchers that we just mentioned all of a sudden were like, bang, giving you six great innings.
I think the best comment you can make, which kind of illustrates the point, is most Met fans, if they didn't have McClain or Sproat here, would feel like they have no chance.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a stretch, because Peterson was the guy going into the season. I remember saying, he's the ace. Forget Kodai Senga. Like, the way he pitched in the postseason, David Peterson's the ace of the staff. I don't feel like that at all, and haven't for a while. He hasn't been good. Senga, as you said, weird, strange, whatever his deal is. That hasn't gone so good. You know, the Manaea thing, he just isn't the same pitcher as last year. I agree with you. He's probably not 100% and might not be until the start of next year. Clay Holmes hasn't done this in a long time, so you don't know what you get from him, which is why that whole tandem thing may work, might not work, but here we are with 10, 11 games to go. We're not sure if it's going to work other than the one day that it did work, and the goal is to get the games to Edwin Diaz. Edwin Diaz is a non-factor most nights.
Yep.
Because he's never on the mound.
Yeah, you're right.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. and T's apply.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.